Like, first off, how it's important to us. If you were born and somebody taught you the concept of chair, and they said, well, this is a chair. If you weren't able to generalize, you would have to relearn the concept of chair every time you saw a new type of chair. So you say, oh, that's a chair, and it looks like that, and it's for this purpose, and then other types of chairs would be chairs as well. That's your ability to generalize. Now, sometimes our generalizations can become barriers to our success or barriers to what we're allowed to produce in our life. For example, if somebody learns the concept of chair and then they sit in one when they're younger, like let's say they sit in a rocking chair and the rocking chair falls over, then they could generalize that experience to mean something or nothing. If they generalize that to mean something, like they say, oh no, I fell over in this chair, therefore all chairs are bad, that's going to affect what they sort for in life and therefore what becomes part of their experience. Because they'll look for chairs to be bad. And they'll find that to be true in their world. Now they could say, well, if they say all chairs are bad. Now by the way, people do this in relationships as well, don't they? They say, oh, here's a bad one. All relationships are bad. Or they'll do that cross-contextually. Like maybe they'll find that it's kind of like the guy who's, when he's younger, sees that his parents don't have a great relationship, yet perhaps they have a lot of money. And he could generalize that to mean something or nothing. He could generalize that to mean, no big deal if he doesn't generalize that experience. Or he could look at that and say, wow, money and relationships don't go hand in hand. Therefore, if that's what money does to relationships, I don't want to have any money. Or he could take it the other way and say, wow, if that's what happens, I don't want to have anything to do with relationships. Now, that type of generalization is going to affect what appears inside that individual's world because they're going to then sort for that. Now, remember, we can only be consciously aware of or consciously manage 7 plus or minus 2 chunks of information simultaneously. So out of that 2 million bits coming in, we're deleting, distorting, and generalizing a whole lot. And we're chunking that down. We're coming up. We're making an internal representation of reality. Now let's take a look at what causes the deletions, the distortions, and generalizations. Any questions so far on deleting, distorting, generalizing? No? Okay. So what causes what we delete, what we distort, and what we generalize are these filters inside this person's head. So the first is our experience of time, space, matter, and energy. And we're really going to get into that as we begin to look at quantum physics because we're going to begin to deal at this master practitioner level. We're going to begin to deal with the quantum nature of the human being. So we'll really take a look at what determines our experience of time, space, matter, and energy. So that's going to make a huge difference in terms of what we see out there. Our language will determine what appears inside our world. Our language determines what concepts are available to us. For example, the Eskimos have several different words for the word snow. Therefore, they have several different experiences of snow that aren't available to us in the United States, for example. Right? So we have so many experiences of snow. We've got sleet, hail, I'm running out. What else is there? Fluffy snow, slush. Yeah, we got so many experiences. Well, whereas the Eskimos have many, many different experiences of snow. Therefore, they experience that in different ways. In the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki says that if you want to increase your financial well-being, like if you want to bring more money into your world, one of the only things that you need to do is increase your financial vocabulary. Why is that? That's your experience. If you don't have the language to support the knowledge, then the knowledge doesn't exist, and therefore that world doesn't exist to you. So if you wanted to bring in the ability to create more in terms of your investments, you'd have to have the language to support that. By the way, when we shift our language, we shift our focus, which means our 7 plus or minus 2 shifts as well, and we're taking in new things. So to learn a foreign language, we have to go and focus on different aspects of reality that we weren't previously focused on. So our language will actually determine that which appears in our world. Our language will determine that which appears in our world, or even what concepts are available to us. I was watching an Indian chief on television one time, and he said that in his tribe they had no word for war, and therefore the concept didn't exist. Now the question is, was it the word that didn't exist first, or the concept that didn't exist, therefore they didn't have a word to describe it? For me, it's irrelevant. And I think Ludwig von Wittgenstein said it best. He's an analytical philosopher who once said, whereof one cannot speak, one cannot think. So if you don't have the language to support it, you can't think that way. And later on in the training, we'll be having a real good friend of mine, Gary, will come in and present some information on language. And you'll find that where your language doesn't go, your language can have the potential of leading your thoughts, which leads your focus, and therefore determines what appears inside your world as well. So language is one of the major filters. Our memories determine that which is available to us in terms of what we will sort for in life, what we will delete, what we will distort, and what we will generalize. For example, somebody who is raised in an environment where they experience memories of... let's say, take a Rupert Murdoch, who has over 700 organizations. He's a multi-billionaire, arguably one of the most powerful men in the world. His upbringing provided to him certain memories that caused him to sort differently in the world than somebody else. For example, when he was younger, his father was always, both his father and his mother were always very demanding on him. It was never good enough. Nothing was ever good enough. And therefore, as a result of some of those memories that he experienced, he then looked differently into the world. Like it was, as he began to move into the world, things just weren't good enough for him. Now, by the way, it's not just our memories. It's also the decisions, which falls right underneath memories. It's not just the memories. It's also the decisions that we make about those memories. Okay? Because I find that extraordinary people, people who produce extraordinary results in the world, are often just ordinary people who make extraordinary decisions. Because you could take the same memory, like let's say Gandhi. Gandhi, when Gandhi was younger, at one point he was thrown off a train. All Gandhi wanted to do was he wanted to become a, like the English gentleman. He wanted to be a lawyer. In fact, he trained to be a lawyer. And he was a lawyer. He became a lawyer. And one day he was traveling on a train, and he was thrown off for being in first class because he was Indian. And they said, you're colored, you're not allowed to be in first class. And they threw him off the train. Now, there's a memory. That memory is going to shape where he goes in his life. But it's not as much the memory as it, in that case, in this particular case, is it as the decision that he makes about that memory. Because at that point, he could have decided, oh, wow, I am a second-class citizen. I'll never go anyplace. Therefore, I shouldn't be in first class. But he made a different decision about that memory that empowered him. He decided that he was going to stand up for duty and honor, and the duty and honor of his people. And that decision that day... to a large extent, is what freed India from British rule. So our decisions shape where we go in life. We have decisions that empower us and decisions that disempower us. The memories, I'll go a little bit further on memories, though. I believe that our reference experiences determine that which we sort for. Whether or not we make empowering decisions, whether we make empowering decisions about them or disempowering decisions, our references will clearly determine that which appears in our world or that which we sort for. That's why one of the things that I did is I started to get it really into modeling the methodology of NLP, which I think is a side that's undervalued in a lot of schools. That's why I began to look toward expanding people's references. We have breakthrough events that we do in all the trainings that we do, such as, you know, whether we do the edge where we hang someone off a cliff, looking down the cliff where they're forced to go inside and find a place of calmness and centeredness within themselves amongst chaos, or whether it be a ropes course where we have to climb the pole and have to take a leap off the pole, or whether we have them, or the hang gliding, which we'll be actually doing in this training. We'll all be going hang gliding. For me, your references determine what you sort for in life. Like, I always had powerful references when I was a child. I had done martial arts all my life. And that martial arts, having overcome adversity in the past, I knew I could overcome adversity in the future, and I believe that that's been a powerful propulsion system for me as I move forward into my life. So I look to create, in all the trainings that we do, I look to create powerful reference experiences where people are challenged to overcome things that at one time they didn't feel that they could overcome. Therefore, they say, hey, if I did that once, what else can I do in my life? If they generalize it correctly, right? And so what we do is we look to create those powerful reference experiences. If you do this one thing, what else can you do? And for me, what that does is it brings in more of the spice of life, but it also expands our world. Other things that I got from modeling, and we're going to do a section on modeling in this training. And my goal is that you'll be able to do intuitive types of modeling before the end of this training as well, where you can look at somebody that's producing a result, try it on, and replicate that excellence. And we say with modeling, you can replicate the, you can produce the same result that the expert has produced in a fraction of the time that it took the original expert to do with the NLP modeling tools.